Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your Berliozian NBA podcast. It's Thursday, January 19th, and I'm your host as usual, Joe Borelli. I say usual, but I don't know who else would be doing this. I know it's dumb. I have the worst dad humor. I have to apologize to all of you. All of you listeners out there in Podcastville, please forgive my stupid humor. Either you love it, or at least you probably think it's might be kind of, you know, endearing because it's so dumb, or you really hate it, in which case, I'm sorry. I'll stop. No, I probably will never stop. But you're welcome to tune out. I hope you don't. I hope you hang out with me and listen to me ramble about some nonsense. But, you know, I understand if you got to go. If you got other things to do, I totally get it. I wouldn't listen to me either, which is also a lie because I listen to me every time I record something. But anyway, listen, whatever. You know what? If you want to hear more, you can also subscribe to the show on the almightyballer.com website. You can go over there and hit subscribe to the link and listen to all the podcasts on the Almighty Baller Network. Or you can go to thesuperflightpodcast.com and listen to the shows there. Or you can subscribe on iTunes and listen to all the content there. Or you can go to SoundCloud, though I've been pretty bad about putting them up there now since I'm like migrating over to the Almighty Baller. So maybe not check there as much. Although I'm still trying to put them up. I just don't pay for the SoundCloud subscription anymore. So I can't, like, all of the content there is now only on Almighty Baller. So if you want to listen to the full catalog of the Superflight podcast, you'll have to go over to Almighty Baller or you'll have to go to the website. And you can email me at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet the show on Twitter at superflightpod. You can tweet me personally at Joe Borelli. And maybe once in a while, I might put up some music that I'm working on. I tweeted out the other night that the Sixers game had me so amped up that I was inspired to write some music. And I tried and I failed miserably, but it's okay because I'll keep trying. And maybe one day I'll let you guys hear it. If you want to, let me know. It's fine. Or maybe I'll just pull out a guitar and start playing for you now. What do you think? Probably not. But speaking of, today I ended up buying a new instrument, which was dope, man. I got a new bass guitar from someone at work. They just happened to be selling their ex-boyfriend's bass guitar. So guess who swooped in there and snatched that right up? This guy. Yeah, for cheap. And it's not like I don't have way too many of them already in my studio. I just, you know, when somebody's offering a instrument at a ridiculously low price and, you know, how can you pass that up? How? Just tell me. Tell me. If you know, tell me. Because I would love to pass things up once in a while. I just can't do it. This is why I have no money. That's why I'm broke all the time. I can't even stop buying lunch. Yeah, I know I should pack lunch. I know. It saves you a lot of money. I'm just rambling here. Trying to get my mind off of, you guys know what today is, right? It's Inauguration Day, last day of Barack Obama's presidency. I just want to say that it's been a pleasure to have such a wonderfully, seemingly caring and superiorly intelligent person in the Oval Office for the last years. And I felt safe, even when I probably wasn't, and I felt part of a caring and bigger community than myself. And I felt like we were making progress and I felt like everyone was included. And that was really important to me. And it is really important to me. I want everyone to be included. And I want to, you know, I want to live my life with everybody. And I want to, like, people are what makes everything possible. People are what make life worth living. Like, if you don't have these interpersonal connections, then what's the sense? I mean, you can, if you want to live like a hermit in the middle of nowhere, that's fine. That is your choice and it's your option. It's getting harder and harder to do that because the world's getting smaller and smaller, but that's fine. I understand that's probably also part of the backlash, which is the new presidency. Anyway, listen, let's not go down there. But I just wanted to say that having a president in office that was so intelligent and charismatic and, by the way, this is not to be lost, was a huge sports fan, and in particular, a giant NBA fan, was amazing. It was really fun for me. And I think a lot of you, too, and I think we're all going to probably miss him being around. So hopefully he'll stay around in some capacity, and I just want to if President Barack Obama or Michelle or, you know, Joe Biden ever hears any of this, which I doubt they ever will, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for doing such a stellar job for the American people and making me feel comfortable in New York. That's all. What else? Let's see. So, yeah. So I recorded half of this last night and half of this today because, you know, I don't have time to do everything at once because, you know, whatever. Most of us work for a living, you know. Inauguration Day, man. Weird, weird stuff happening. I don't know. Not really weird, but a lot of protests, which are awesome, but riots, not so much. And I think like 100 people now have been arrested for breaking windows and setting cars on fire. And like, do you realize this is part of the problem? You're not making anything better. It's great to protest. I mean, hell, it's great to riot if, you know, as long as you don't damage other people's, like, property. I respect everybody's right to their voice and their right to the protest and their right to do whatever they think is right. And that's awesome. And I'm glad we live in a country that will enable that and allow it. A lot of countries won't. A lot of countries won't allow that at all. And it's fantastic that we live in a country that we can protest the presidency. It's good. But having said that, like, we're adults. We need to act like adults. And I know you feel, a lot of people probably feel betrayed and let down. And I do too. And I'm speaking from a like point of privilege. I understand this as a white male. Like I will never know the plight of a lot of people that live in this country. And I totally sympathize and I understand. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not insinuating that like it was, people of minority groups or people of different ethnic backgrounds that are doing the rioting and the breaking windows and setting cars on fire. I'm just saying that, like, you know, it could have been a bunch of dumb white kids for all I know. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, we need to come together as a people right now, not destroy things in the name of anger and the name of discontent or disillusionment. I don't know. I mean, like, we're all upset. It's crazy. It's, I mean, seriously, I live in New York, so I live in a sort of a liberal bubble. So I don't really know anybody that supports the new president. But whatever. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. And, you know, the great thing about this country is that if you do support him, you're allowed to, and you're allowed to have that opinion. And those are opinions, everyone's different opinions are great. And they're what makes our country great, right? So, like, we are allowed to disagree. We're privileged enough that we can disagree and we can argue and we can fight and we can have differing opinions because ultimately those opinions hopefully come together and make a better overall product or stronger country, stronger nation. I don't know. It's hard to see the other point of view a lot of the time on either side. People who are very conservative don't like my views, and people who are very conservative, I don't really get along with all that well. I shouldn't say I don't get along with, but it's hard for me to keep my tongue silent. But this is a great thing about our country, and I think we have this ability to come together. But listen, let's stop talking about this. I can't keep going on. I've been consumed with this election and consumed with our new president whose name I will not say. So let's move on. Anyway, happy days, everyone. What else was I going to talk to you guys about? I was going to mention, I had a funny thought in my mind. If you do a podcast, I don't know if anyone that listens to this show has their own podcast. But if you put your stuff online, there's different ways where you can find your audience, your core audience, see who is listening and where they're listening from and what countries listen to you the most. And apparently I can find my demographic. I know my demographic. And here's the funny thing. Here's a good joke. My demographic apparently is 75% female, which proves to me that only my three sisters and my brother are listening to this show. Yep, that's my joke. Okay, anyway, last night, because I'm recording this a night after the fact. Last night I had Derek Bodner on the show to talk about some Sixers. Derek Bodner writes for Philly Mag or Philadelphia Mag. I'm not sure which one it is. But anyway, he writes for Philly Mag and he does the Sixers Beat podcast. And he writes for Draft Express and he writes for USA Today. And he's like a super smart dude. And super appreciative that Derek took the time out of his, really busy schedule to come on the Superflight and talk to me about my favorite team. So here's a part of the show where I tell you guys, if you don't like the Sixers, you don't want to hear me talk about them, tune out now because I go a little, I get really emotionally attached and involved. And sometimes I get bad interviews when I'm too close to the subject. Like, this interview could have gone better on my behalf. Derek's awesome in it, but I get really wrapped up and emotionally involved with my Sixers team, especially when they're winning. So it may not have been my best performance, but I think you guys will like it nonetheless. In any case, thanks again, Derek, for coming on. And you guys can follow him on Twitter at Derek Bodner NBA. So hang tight, and after these messages, I'll be right back. Today's sponsor of the Superflight Podcast is Draft Daily Fantasy App. Do you play Daily Fantasy? If so, you should be playing on Draft. Get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost 3 times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. The data shows that 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. It's statistically proven you'll win more often. On Draft Daily Fantasy App, you do a simple snake draft, just like at the beginning of your season-long league. You can do drafts whenever you want. They last for just 1 day, and they take only minutes to complete. So join me and download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store on your tablet or smartphone. Be sure to enter the promo code ABPN when you download, and you'll get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code ABPN. Okay, now on with the show. All right, so Derek, welcome to the Superflight Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
It is my pleasure.
Great. I'm super happy to have you. I say super a lot, so it's probably why I called it the Superflight. hey, listen, why don't you tell everybody about yourself and what you do and how they can reach you?
Well, I cover the Sixers for Philadelphia Magazine and then do some draft work for Draft Express and USA Today. The easiest way is probably on Twitter. At Derek Bodner NBA, and you can get contact information for my email as well if you want to reach out that way.
Awesome, good stuff. Yeah, so thanks for coming on. I'm obviously, so I do this silly podcast. I don't know why I do it, but I like doing it. So it's always fun to have really good guests on, like yourself. Actually, all my guests are really good. I like them all. They're good. All the best. Yeah. but I'm also, so I do an NBA podcast and I'm really a big Sixers fan. So having you on to talk about the Sixers today is like, it's like Christmas for me.
Yeah. Anytime. It doesn't take much to twist my arm to talk about basketball. So go for it.
That's awesome. Did you mention your podcast as well?
Probably not. I probably forgot that one. That is SixersBeat.com.
Cool.
And that is all 76ers.
Yeah, and it's all awesome. I listen to your podcast every week.
It's sometimes passable, so we'll
go with that. Just stop it. Anyway, welcome to the Superflight. You want to talk about some Sixers?
Go for it.
Cool. Yeah, I was emailing you a little bit about, some thoughts I had. And by the way, I don't want to talk about Embiid till the end because, Embiid is we could talk all day about him, but I think we should save the best for last. So, and did you see that he didn't get voted to the All-Star starters?
I did. And I don't think that was particularly surprising. You know, I think obviously the change where they don't have a center in the positions hurts him quite a bit, especially when you have a lot of depth at the forward. I mean, LeBron and Giannis were locks. And then you have, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, a couple of really strong candidates there. So I don't think that really surprised me all that much.
No, but you know what was surprising? Did you see the player votes? Like, he didn't...
Oh, God. Yeah.
The players didn't vote for him at all. Like, they have... I mean, I understand that he's young and he's just getting in the league, and maybe some of them are even... It's possible that they might be a little jelly because he's super popular all out of nowhere. But yeah, it's interesting.
No, I mean, the player voting showed that for as wrong as the fans get it, the players are just as bad. I mean, there are so many players that just really voted for their own teammates. And I mean, I counted down and 13 Sixers players received a vote in the player voting, which I mean, people were just going through and voting for their teammates and being loyal. And I get that. That's also probably why they shouldn't have they shouldn't be a part of it. It's really tough. It's tough because the NBA has made, defined your earning potential based off of all-star selections in part. And so I'm of the camp where you want to take it kind of seriously. And that is tough to do. That is tough to do because you want the fans to feel like they're involved and to have a say in the product which is meant to be entertaining. But by the same token, you want people around the game to have a say, but when the players aren't going to really take it all that seriously, it is, you know, it leaves yourself open. But, you know, like I said, I don't really have a huge problem with Joel not being a starter. It'll be interesting to see what they do now that the coaches have to select the reserves. And you kind of think that maybe they might want a rim protector and a big man among that group. And I certainly think when you start looking at the candidates, Joel is he should be in consideration.
For sure. I totally agree with you on all of that. It's just a little surprising to me that, like, you know, the players didn't vote for him, but I wanted to talk more about some of the other players on the Sixers before we started talking about Embiid, but, you know, whatever. Hey, I can't stop talking. I think all of us can't stop talking about him at this point, but we'll get to that. Robert Covington. Okay. So I emailed you that his improvement on defense has been such a stark contrast this year from last year. And I was thinking, like, the only other player in the league that has improved to such an extent overall game, not just on defense, but, like, he's on par with Giannis, the way he's improved his defense so much. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. What do you think about Roko's defense?
I mean, his defense has improved by leaps and bounds. I remember when he came up in his first season with the Sixers, not his rookie season, because he had that cup of coffee with Houston. Mm-hmm. But when he first came up and he got signed from the D League, I think a week or two after the season started, I forget exactly how that went down. But I know he came up and you saw him playing. You're like, okay, this guy can really shoot. We get that. But who can he defend? And at that point, I didn't think he could defend the threes. Like, I thought if you were going to play him at the three, he was going to be out of position. And over time, he's just improved to such a degree. And look, I think even right now, laterally, he's not as quick as some of these players that he's defending, especially point guards.
Right.
But he's developed to the point where he can use his length, where he can fight over screens really at an elite level, and where his anticipation and his effort is so high that he's switching on to point guards. He's cross-matching on to point guards. You see him, when Isaiah Thomas starts getting going, you'll see Brett Brown throw Covington on him. And for him to make that kind of jump to the point where I didn't think he could be anything other than a small ball four when he first came up, to the point where you're defending him on ones, twos, threes, and fours, it's great versatility to have. He has such an incredible ability to force turnovers and ignite the break because of that. He really has turned himself into a really good all-around defender, and it's a surprising development for me. It's a real testament to both Covington and Brett Brown, and it's also a really good development, because in your role players, you want a guy who, even when his shot isn't falling, he's giving that really great effort on the defensive side of the court, and he's really his focus is there on the defensive side of the court, and that's never wavered this year.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, you guys talked already about how the fans were booing him. And so let me talk a little bit about how, you mentioned his lateral quickness is not quite there at the level where he can guard really, you know, smaller guards very much. But again, he's really good at putting himself in the right position and anticipating. Yep. It's the thing, and I don't want to harp on Okafor, even though I'm not a big fan. I don't have anything against him personally, but I'd really wish they'd get rid of him on this team. It's the exact opposite of what, like, Okafor does. It's you watch him play, and he's a big body. He's got long arms. He could get himself into position to stop some things from going to the rim, but he doesn't. He doesn't understand how to get into these spots where he should be before the player gets there. Like, anticipation and just effort. There's, like, it's key. There's so many guys we've seen throughout the history of the league that they've made it. Like, TJ McConnell, but we'll get to him, but, like, He doesn't have all the skill of, like, say, Kyrie Irving, but somehow he's doing really well as a point guard, and it's because he tries and he understands the game and he works really hard at it, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's we're in a game where more and more it's, you know, when the offensive players, they really want to get you in space, spread you out, and make quick decisions with the basketball. And the reaction to that is you need defenders who can really operate in space and make quick decisions on their rotations. And you hit the nail on the head. It's, you know, is defense part athleticism? Sure. And having length and having quickness and speed, that all helps. But how quickly can you make decisions? That's the most important part to me on defense. And part of that is effort, because you have to be able to translate that decision and that recognition into actual tangible results. But a big part of that is, you know, just processing information quickly.
Yeah.
And like you said with Okafor, that's slow. But a guy like Covington, a guy like Embiid, they do that really well. And certainly I think, you know, for Okafor, that has been one of my biggest concerns really since I started heavily scouting him in high school in Chicago. Certainly at Duke, you saw that a lot. And I go back and I kind of read my pre-draft profile on him, and I think a lot of the concerns that I saw there have borne out to be true, which in some ways makes me a little disappointed, but it certainly happens. But yeah, I mean, on this team, you can see such a difference between those guys who really do process the game at game speed at an elite level and those who don't.
Yeah, and that's really something I don't even know if you can teach it. You can't teach a guy how to understand, right? Like when I was in school, they couldn't teach me how to do long division. I just couldn't get it. Like it was, there was no amount of like homework or detention that I was going to go through that it was ever going to make me get it. It just doesn't happen. And I think Okafor, not to talk about him too much, because I don't want to pile on the guy. I kind of feel bad for him at this point. But yeah, he's just, I don't ever see him developing that defensive presence, that defensive awareness really is what it is.
No. And I mean, I think it's fair to say he'll probably improve at it. Like, I think everybody, the more you do something, the better you get at it. The question is whether he's ever going to improve enough.
Right.
And I mean, it's, I share many of the same concerns that you do.
Yeah. Also, I want to talk about him a little bit more too, but I really wanted to make this point because I didn't get to weigh in a couple weeks ago when everyone was booing Robert Covington. And while we were talking about how he just tries and he gives you all the effort in the world, and even when his shot's not falling, his defense is still there. I am so upset with the Philly fans when they boo him, man. Not to put Philly fans on blast, I mean, because I'm from the area, but it bums me out a little bit. You know, I mean, they do it here in New York too, of course.
You know, the justification for Philly fans booing was always that, you know, they boo effort or they boo a lack of effort.
Right.
Well, that's not the case.
Right.
Like it's not effort that's making Robert Covington miss shots. So I think it's really, you know, I mean, when people say they boo effort, I think more often than not, they're trying to justify booing. And that's the justification that they're using. And clearly, you know, he is giving effort. I get that when you watch a player and he goes, you know, 2 for 8. Night after night, it's really easy to see those missed shots, and it's frustrating. And everybody can do the math and think, oh, you know, we're down by 6 points, but if Robert Covington had just made 2 3-pointers, we'd be right in this game. Like that's really mm-hmm. easy to do, but it really is a small part of the game. It really is a fickle part of the game that comes and goes. And you can look at, you know, pretty much any shooter who will have a down year or down years in his career. It is, you know, it's a high variance shot. And you have to be willing to live with those results. I, you know, it is frustrating because Robert is a little bit, you know, he's very limited in what he can provide offensively outside of that shot. I think he's doing a little bit better of a job cutting off the ball than he has in years past, but he's mm-hmm. still not a guy who you're going to give the ball to and ask to create off the dribble at all. And I think that makes these slumps a little more pronounced.
Right.
But at this point, he is what he is. And if you believe he can get back to a 35, 36, 37% three-point shooter with that consistent defense, then he's a piece.
For sure. And I think, you know, to be honest, his shot is coming back a little bit. And since they're forcing him to drive, he's getting a little bit better at it. I mean, he gets called for an offensive foul like every game, but and he loses the ball a little bit. His handle's not very tight, but whatever. I mean, like, I still appreciate that guy in the same way. And I was going to make this point to you. Iguodala is still one of my favorite players. He got berated or lambasted for, I don't even know what word you want to use. I'm bad at my words. For like having a max contract in Philadelphia and not being a max player. And I get that. But that guy was all heart and he was all defense. And I love a defensive player. So what do you think? Is Covington like the best wing defender we've had since, I say we, I'm in New York, Philadelphia has had since Iggy?
That's a good question. I would certainly have to consider it. Yeah. Yeah, he might be.
I mean, the only one I can think of is Mbamute, but he was really a small forward.
He was
forward,
more of a 3-4. Right? Yeah. He was more of a, especially when he was in Philly, he was more of a 4. Yeah, probably. I think you could probably go. I'm trying to quickly go through, and I'm not coming up with any right now. So sure, we'll go with yes.
All right.
I think that's certainly fair. If he's not, he's in the conversation.
Good. Hey, listen, I'm the worst at looking up statistics. I have no idea how to use the internet, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, well, I have I'm the worst at always forgetting somebody obvious. So yeah, we'll see. I'm sure somebody will find out who we're missing.
If you do, they can tweet you, not me. Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that point up. I feel about Roko. Oh, by the way, I know you guys talked about the stupid nicknames and shortening nicknames. Roko's the one I'm going to defend for me because I am an artist, and I don't know if you know about the Rococo movement, but it always makes me think of that.
Okay. I don't personally have a problem shortening names. I mean, it would be nice to have a little more creativity involved, but by the same token, I mean, I'm also not a huge nickname guy.
Yeah,
like, I think
fair.
There are a handful that are really unique and that are really identifiable with the player.
Like the
and
process?
Then the rest, sure. I mean, it's certainly unique. And then the rest are just, to me, really a shortened way of saying their name. So I don't, you know, to me, it's not so much, I'm not bothered by it all that much.
Okay, yeah. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. Yeah. Anyway, we were talking about TJ and how he's like a scrappy little guy. And so he hit this game winner a couple weeks ago. I guess it was a couple weeks ago already, right? This season is flying by. He hit the game winner over Melo and Porzingis.
Yep.
Yeah, it was, oh my God, that was like the Super Bowl for me. I was literally jumping up and down in my studio like, oh my God. Yeah, that's the fanboy in me, sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. But right before that, during this game, like, he missed a wide open jump shot. And I was about to tweet out and make myself look like a real jerk that, like, love TJ, love his effort, love the way he understands the game and his heart and how he gets the guys on the team to respect him, even though they know that, like, he's probably got less talent than anybody else on that team.
Yeah.
But because he can't hit that shot, that's why he can't be a starting point guard in the league. And then he goes and hits that winning shot, man. What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, the shot was a great moment, and it was really a moment, you know, where you could see this team starting to turn a corner. And I know the Knicks have been struggling for not a long time, but they've been struggling of late. There's a lot of dysfunction there. And a lot of the teams the Sixers have beaten have, you know, been right around that 500 mark, right around the cusp of the playoffs up until the Raptors win the other night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, great win, but it's really a team that's starting to create not an identity, but a confidence level, closing out games that they didn't have certainly in previous years, and really just a month or two ago. So to have that moment where, you know, TJ could make that shot, you could see that moment with Embiid and TJ, and one of the pictures that came out was Embiid grabbing TJ by the neck, and I swear I was worried for TJ's life, but he got out of it. You know, it's been a real bonding experience for the team, and they've gotten a lot more confidence in each other, and you can see the team really kind of taking Joel's personality and running with it. And I think, you know, TJ was talking after the game how he thinks that was his first game-winning shot he's ever made at any level of basketball.
Yeah.
It was just a really good moment. And it came off of a really broken play. I mean, Porzingis airballed a three in the corner to set that up. And then a floorboard and a couple of deflections and a helter-skelter race to the other end. And it was a fun moment. It was a really good moment for the team.
Yeah, it was great. You know, and I've talked about this before, about how, for me, when you're watching your team, like, especially in this case, the Sixers have been bad for 3 years, 4 years. Actually, if you want to go back a decade since Iverson, they've been bad, right? And for me, watching a team get good is almost more satisfying in a weird way than actually watching them win a championship. So right now, at the gelling moment they're having when guys are starting to, like, contribute and find their sort of identity and, like, rally around each other and do these sorts of things, oh my God, this is so much fun. And they're actually really fun to watch too. And you got to give Brett Brown a lot of credit. I made these stupid predictions at the beginning of the season. And one of them was that, like, based on, you know, years past and based on the preseason and then Ben Simmons getting injured, and we didn't know Embiid was going to be this. I figured that my preseason prediction was that, like, you know, Sixers are going to start out 0-18 again and Brett Brown's going to get fired. And even though, like, I love Brett Brown as a head coach, I couldn't think of a single person that would have held these guys together like this the last 4 years. I mean, he's perfect for this job, and that says a lot about Sam Hinkie, too. But I forget what I was going with this. Anyway, you got to give him a lot of credit. It's an amazing job he's done, and it's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a lot of criticism, maybe not criticism, maybe skepticism about Brown, especially earlier in the season when a lot of these same late-game collapses happened, which is part of the reason why, you know, why it was nice to see them pull off a couple of these late-game wins. But, I mean, it was so hard to judge him because, yeah, they maybe didn't execute well in the second half of games. They didn't execute well down the stretch. But when you're at such a talent deficit, you know, it's hard to really differentiate what is poor execution and what is a poor talent level. And, you know, I think you're seeing now with Embiid asserting himself, with defenses giving Embiid so much attention, and with the then space and ability and one-on-one matchups that everybody else is getting because of that, they're executing a lot better. And it helps that Embiid has a learning curve that is something that you don't really see all that frequently, and he's making strides by the day. And having that focal point, I mean, it opens things up for Brown. They're playing so much better, and they're defending their you-know-what's off, and that's given them a real identity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you said you don't see people doing this at this level usually. I mean, I can't think of a single person that's ever picked up the game this quickly. Can you?
No, it's pretty insane. I mean, years ago today, he was playing JV basketball in his first season of organized basketball ever. I mean, that was 5 years ago. 2.5 of those years, he was spent rehabbing his navicular bone injuries and not participating in, you know, sanctioned official 5-on-5 team practices.
Mm-hmm.
So his actual basketball experience is so incredibly small. And for him to be as fundamentally sound as he is and have the kind of, like we were talking about earlier, the kind of instincts and the ability to process information at such a high level, it's just, I mean, he's a special talent and he is a really special student of the game. And the combination of those two will be great to watch in the next decade. Oh, knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't wait. You know, we keep drifting over to Embiid. I really want to save him for the last, but whatever.
it's hard to talk about this team without bringing him up.
You can't, you know, and that's the thing. You can't. Like you were just mentioning about I was thinking about a point when you were talking about Brett Brown and his coaching, and like, what can you judge him by when is it like the lack of coaching or is it the lack of talent? And you can still see it when Embiid is not on the court. There's still an extreme lack of talent and they can't. The other night when Okafor started and you know, Embiid had to sit for a back-to-back, it looked just like the same teams we had seen the last 3 years. And I'm like, well, oh my God.
I think last year they had a negative 10 point something net rating, which is just, you take the point differential per 100 possessions, and I mean, that's what they were, at negative 10.
Mm-hmm.
They're at a negative 11 when Embiid's off the court this year. So all the changes they made, the Henderson, the Bayless, who only played 3 games,
yep,
Rodriguez, Ilyasova, all that, when Embiid's not on the court, it's the same problems as last year. It's really been amazing the kind of difference that one guy can make, especially, like we said, one 22-year-old rookie who didn't play basketball in 2.5 years.
You know, I hate to say this. I'm going to do it anyways. When I was emailing you, I almost tweeted this out on Martin Luther King Day. I was going to tweet, it's amazing the difference that one man can make. And then I realized how bad that would sound when I'm referring to Embiid and not Martin Luther King. I was like, not going to do that. But yeah, it's really, to this team, it's amazing the difference that one guy can make. And I've already jumped over everything else I wanted to talk about and got stuck on Embiid. Let's go back.
you should try writing about the team.
You know what?
It's impossible to write about anything else.
I can imagine. I would love to write about the team. I'm just the world's worst writer, so nobody wants to read that.
That's one thing we have in common, though.
Oh, stop it. I love your stuff. I don't know what you're talking about, my friend. I'll tell you what. I'll write you a song about the team.
Yeah. You know what? That was funny. That was, yeah, you're talking about the Choo Choo song?
Yeah, well, no, that, but I am actually, okay. I actually write songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
but yeah, that's the Choo Choo song was ridiculous. It was
really
good. Well,
I mean, that got a lot of attention. That got a lot of focus. So maybe you should just make it funny. Put a couple of process jokes in there and it'll go viral.
funny.
I'll tweet it out for you.
All right, cool. It's funny because the other night I was, after that Raptors game, I like tweeted out on my personal account. I was like, wow, this game was so exciting. It's inspired me to write some music. And I came in here and I started like just pumping out some like punk music, you know, guitar and stuff. And the first thing I started singing was like, make Joel Embiid an all-star. I was like, this is bad. Yeah. I'm going to stop. But listen, let's talk about one of my other favorite players before we go totally down the Embiid road. Nerlens Noel.
So his impact with the team is not insignificant. And I think, like, when he was out, you know, and Okafor was coming off the bench. Again, I'm not doing this to harp on Okafor because I have nothing against the guy personally, even though his dad wants to kick people's asses. You know, like, I'm sure he's a fine guy. But Noel's presence coming off the bench as a defensive stopper, and listen, his jumper looks actually really much improved. And he's still, you know, he can still dunk with the best of them. I just think it's, he's so good for this team. And I'm just wondering, do you think it's a possibility that, like, Brian Colangelo changes his mind and really wants to keep him around?
I'm not going to say it's not a possibility. I will say that I would be pretty surprised if that happened. I'm not sure there is a trust level between Colangelo and Noel in terms of Noel being willing to accept his role long term and accept coming off the bench and maybe playing 20 to 25 minutes a night and doing that quietly and being happy about that role. I'm not sure that Noel is there, or at least that Brian Colangelo feels like Noel is there,
right,
enough to then go into the summer and commit that kind of money towards him. So I'm not saying it can't happen. I would just be a little bit surprised about it.
Yeah, I would too. I guess maybe I'm just, like, optimistic that they'll keep him, because he's one of my favorite players, like, not just on the team, but in the league. I just love what he does. And, you know, you just can't find guys like Nerlens. I mean, of course, Joel Embiid overshadows Nerlens Noel, of course. But you can't find guys like Nerlens Noel to be that guy. You know, he's just the defensive presence. And, like, I think he means so much to the team. And, by the way, like, he's one of the only holdovers from the Hinkie era. So, like, letting him go kind of would bum me out on that respect too. And also, I'd like to see more of him playing next to Embiid. Just, we've seen, like, what, 8 minutes of it in total?
Yeah. Yeah, no, eight minutes exactly. That's it hasn't happened in quite some time too. No, I mean, I like Noel a lot. That kind of defensive versatility, being able to switch on to guards, being able to, you know, really disrupt the pick and roll, to cover ground in terms of weak side rotations. It is very, very valuable. The Sixers so far this season they've struggled a little bit, especially of late. In the last 10 games, they've struggled defensively when Embiid has gone to the bench. And part of that is, you know, hot perimeter three-point shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're shooting about 40% when Noel's on the court. And a lot of times that can sometimes have something to do with the big man, but a lot of times it doesn't. A lot of times it doesn't even really have much to do with the perimeter defenders. When you're looking statistically whether a team's defending well, you're almost looking more whether or not they're denying three-point shots than whether or not shots are going in. Because, you know, shots from the perimeter are so, you know, there's so much variance in that shot that you could defend a shot and it could go in, and for 5, 6, 7 games you could just have bad luck. And that will eventually kind of normalize over the course of a season. Whereas if you're defending, you know, you're defending close enough or you're actually forcing teams to pass up shots, that's a much better indication that the shots are well contested and whatnot. So I think there's probably a little bit of noise in that. But I do think Noel, he's kind of getting the timing back in terms of his rotations and what shots he can get to. He seems like he's been in the middle in terms of, should I block the shot or go for the rebound a little bit? And the defensive rebounding has not yet been there. But in terms of the overall impact he can have, I think he's a real perfect fit as a big man off the bench. And like I said, being able to really blow up a pick and roll, to switch onto a guard if needed, and to force turnovers is such a huge asset. And I think Noel provides that really as well as any big man in the league. And he's really unique in that regard. I would love to see him around. I would certainly give a lot of money to him in the offseason to make that a reality. I'm just not sure if the Sixers are there as well.
Right. And, you know, it's his turnovers, I think, are for me, it's a huge thing. Like, he, for a big man, for a guy who's 6'11", he has the quickest hands I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, he can guard guards and knock the ball away from them. It's just, it's astounding. It's just, I don't have a better word for it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
And I think he's actually, to be honest with you, I think he's rubbed some of that off on Robert Covington, because Covington's doing the exact same move now. The backside reach around and just knocking. That sounds really bad. sorry. and knocking the ball. I know what you meant, though. You know what I meant. Right. Yeah. Hopefully everybody listening knows what I meant. And knocking the ball out of the player's hands. Like, I don't see that very often. I haven't seen anybody try that move until Nerlens Noel got in the league, and now Covington's doing it too, and I love it. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, Noel just brings so much to the table on the defensive end that, yes, it looks like he's getting his comfort level back. He's been out most of the season. And he's, you know, he hasn't been himself of, like, last year. The one thing that he does look like himself about, you know, like, last year and the year before is that when he's on the court, the offense just goes straight in the tank. So that's kind of a problem. And I know when Ish Smith was here, he was really good at getting Nerlens Noel lobs, which was a lot of fun to watch. And I think guys are, you know, on the opposite teams have scouted for that enough now that they know, like, he's going to pick and he's going to dive right to the rim. You better cover him because he's going to, you know, he's going to just dunk on your head. And I think a lot of teams have been really good at taking that away from him. Yep. And I think, as you mentioned, it's probably just a matter of getting his rhythm back to a certain extent. But yeah, I feel like they should throw the max at him. And if you need to, you can trade him because he's going to be a valuable, like, he's a valuable player. People will take him on. And there's so much salary cap room now that there hasn't been before. I don't see the harm in just signing him.
Yeah, I would certainly, judging by what has been rumored to be out there, not necessarily right now because there hasn't been a whole lot of leaks, but what was out there in the summer, if it's still like that, I would hold on to him and see what kind of offers come to him in restricted free agency. But like I said, I'm not entirely sure where the Sixers' heads are at.
Yeah, and his. You mentioned too, like, is he going to be happy coming off the bench? Right.
That's a big part of this decision, definitely. And he has been, ever since he complained initially, he has been good about it publicly. But again, that's public. That's, I need to do this for the next month and a half until the trade deadline. That doesn't necessarily mean what he would be like, you know, over the next 4 years.
Right, for sure. And then, you know, but again, I think it's still a tradable contract. But, you know, what am I? I'm not a GM. I can barely talk about basketball. That's why I have you on. But that does bring up, like, do you think there's a chance that Okafor gets moved before the deadline or at the deadline?
I think right now pretty much anything is on the table. You know, I don't know that they're necessarily married to either of these two as the long-term backup five man. So I think if somebody comes and gives you value for them, yeah, I think there's a chance. You know, I think the fact that Okafor has fallen out of the rotation is largely because they want to get Noel a chance to get back into it. And I think Brett Brown is just done trying to play all three of them in the same game. You know, but I think there are obvious defensive concerns when he does come in. And there are real obvious defensive concerns in terms of his long-term projection. So I would have to assume that Brett has noticed this. I would have to assume that it concerns them. So, I mean, it really depends. It depends on a lot of things. The value you get back, whether or not, you know, maybe Jahlil is more accepting of that role than Nerlens would be long term. But I also think they have a lot of confidence in Rashawn Holmes, too. So I think there is a scenario where you could see both of them moved. It'll be really interesting. They could go in many different directions over the next, you know, next month and a half until the trade deadline, or the next 6 months when free agency comes around.
Right, the forgotten man, Holmes. Yeah, that's the thing too. Like, you know, he's sitting on the bench, and he's been a really good soldier about this, right? He started out the season.
He's in the D League now.
Oh, is he really?
I think he is. Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Oh my God, shame on me. That's what I get for working for a living. Yeah. But by all counts, man, that guy's been really professional about this whole thing. And he's good enough to play, too. Like, he's definitely good enough to be coming off your bench and giving you some good minutes. Like, he's really improved with his rebounding. His shot's obviously better than Noel's is right off the bat. And I think he could stretch out to the three at points. Not very consistently, but, like, he gives you a little bit more offensively than Nerlens Noel does. And he's also, like, very energetic. He really, yep, he works really hard, and I really respect that about guys that work really hard. Again, the reason, like, I have such a problem with Okafor is that he clearly just doesn't give 2 cents, is what we'll say, on the defensive end.
Sure.
And, like, in Okafor's defense, he has one of the first, like, quickest first steps for a big man, I think, in the league right now. I mean, he's not super quick, but that first step, when he wants to go to the rim and spin, like, it's blazingly fast. He gets around everyone. So he definitely has some post moves. He can sort of shoot a jump shot. And, you know, he's an offensive weapon. But I think that the, you know, people around the league probably see the same things the Sixers do. And, like, his defense is just atrocious. I don't know what they could possibly get for him.
The defense is really bad. And in a league where the pick and roll, its importance grows by the day.
Mm-hmm.
for him to be that bad at it, it's really tough to overcome. And you start looking at the kind of team you would have to construct in order to really make the most of his offensive talent. And you're talking about, you know, really putting four other shooters around him. You're talking about getting shooting at the four, at the three, at, you know, every position. And then having guys who can do that, who can work in a pick and roll also, but who can also defend and cover up for his defensive, you know, deficiencies.
Right.
It's really hard to find, you know, guys who can do both. That's part of what's great about Embiid, is he can legitimately anchor one of the best defenses in the NBA. Almost, not single-handedly, because defense is never single-handedly, but I mean, he's doing it right now. I think the Sixers have a top 10 defense right now on the season. And that's with guys like Nick Stauskas and Sergio Rodriguez, yeah, and guys who are just overmatched defensively getting really major minutes. So one of the great things about Embiid is that he can do that. So now you have a lot more flexibility in the teammates you can go around him and find guys who really complement him offensively. I worry if you really focus on complementing Okafor's offensive skill set, you're going to have a defense that just can't compete night in and night out.
Well, I think we've seen that already. And not only is him being on the court, like, he's shown that he's bad at defense, he makes everybody on the court worse. The exact opposite of what Embiid does. Like, when Embiid's on the court, we were talking earlier about how, like, just so Embiid is, he's a 7'2" guy. He doesn't move laterally all that quickly. I mean, he has two giant steps and he's all the way across the other side of the court, but his ability to know where he should be at the right time is incredible. It's incredible. And it's just, his defense is just stellar. So then you can put guys around him like Nick Stauskas, who's, by the way, he's gotten better on defense. He's not as bad as he was last year, I think, but he's still not, like, you know, he's not a stopper by any means. And then you have Sergio Rodriguez, who I don't even, you know, God, I don't know if he could stop like a 10-year-old, but
yeah.
But Embiid, like, he makes up for all that. So let's talk about Embiid. Okay, here we are on this point of the podcast. I've been gushing about him for days and weeks on end. But let's go down that rabbit hole. Let's talk about him. He makes such a difference to this team. I tweeted this, like, at the very beginning of the season. With him on the court, they're a team. Without him, they're not even an NBA team again. They're still a D-League team. I didn't imagine in my wildest dreams that one rookie at 22 years old could have this impact on any team. And he's making this team so much fun. I feel like I'm just regurgitating what I said earlier, but, you know, I think it bears repeating.
Yeah. I mean, it has been, and look, I had probably about as high of hopes for Embiid as you could have had entering the season. I remember after it was announced that he had the navicular bone fracture, you know, a week before the draft or whatever it was in 2014, I still kept him number one overall, and I would have taken him over Wiggins and Parker, even with that huge injury risk. And it still is a huge injury risk, but I think the talent is there and the talent is worth it. And certainly he's shown that. I mean, he is, you know, that ever elusive two-way big man who can really change the team defensively and anchor one of the best defenses in the game, while also being a focal point offensively. I mean, during this, you know, this stretch, I think they're, what, 7-2 in the last 9 games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's averaging like 23 points a game in like 27 minutes while doing it relatively efficiently. I mean, I think he's gotten to the free throw line 46 times over the last 3 games. For a guy who's playing 27 minutes a night, that's insane. That's absolutely insane. So for him to be able to be a focal point on both sides of the court at this young age and not look completely out of place doing it, and in fact, not only not looking completely out of place, but playing at an all-star level despite the minutes restrictions, it has been really incredible. And there is nobody, and I mean nobody, who can be watching him and say that their expectations haven't been far exceeded. And it's just so, you know, you look at him and you look at 7'2", 270, moves like he does, and also has a learning curve that he does, and the basketball intelligence that he does, and the aptitude to pick the game up at a really fast level.
And don't forget his self-awareness, because he's funny as hell.
Oh, he is everything that you could hope for in terms of, you know, a guy who can connect with your fan base. It's really hard to put a limit on this guy. And I feel like we say that maybe more than we should about young people, but I really feel like that's the case here.
For sure. And you know, the thing is, like, oh, so he's breaking records this year that have never been, like, he's averaging, what, I'm sorry, not averaging, but he has put up 20 plus points in the last, I think, 9 games, which is the, but he's doing it on less than 30 minutes a game. It's the first rookie ever to do this.
Yep.
20 plus points in what, 27 minutes a game? First one ever to do. It's incredible. And if we're talking about records he's breaking and things he's doing that no one has ever done, he had 2 surgeries on his foot that, like, people don't come back from. And in his first year playing, he should be an all-star. It's, I don't know where this guy came from. I know, like, last year, people were a little bit upset that, like, you know, Sam didn't pick Porzingis and, like, we got Okafor instead. And, like, I know there was a lot of people that were upset that, like, yeah, we could have had Porzingis. Dude, we got Embiid. Like, it's stop. Just stop. We got Embiid. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's impossible not to think. Like, I don't blame people for thinking about Porzingis, because just thinking of those two together is, I mean, you could have had the future of the NBA for the next 10 years.
Yeah, but you'll just drive yourself crazy thinking about that.
Oh, sure, sure. It will. But it's, you know, I think it's natural. But yeah, I mean, if you would have told me, hey, you're going to go through 3 years of tanking, and you're going to walk away with Embiid and Simmons and a Lakers pick that should be top 5 or top 7, a Sacramento Kings pick in 2019, and a pick swap, which is looking like more and more of a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Just Embiid being on that list and looking like he does, that to me was worth it alone. I mean, this is a guy, and I probably would take some flack for saying this in Philadelphia, and I'm not saying he's going to have a better career because the injuries are that big of a concern.
Right.
But I think he's a better prospect than Allen Iverson, a guy who's just, you know, inducted in the Hall of Fame. And I don't do that lightly. I don't, like, this is the best prospect this team has had maybe in 30 years.
Since Barkley, maybe?
Yeah, since Barkley. And that is, I mean, that's absurd, but that's really hard to get. It's really important to get in today's NBA, which, I mean, I could spend an hour talking about the, you know, CBA reasons why, you know, the league really encourages tanking and makes this not only a viable strategy, but something where if you're not doing it, you're almost doing a disservice. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many financial reasons that free agency just isn't a valid team building exercise anymore. But to get this first step is very important. And I think the Sixers hit a home run on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a point and you just, like, you know, that's, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. I tend to ramble a little bit. You have to cut me off.
No, listen, if you've ever listened to my podcast before, just check out the first 10 minutes of every episode. That's all I do is ramble. I make sure that I get my words in before I get the guest on, because I like to let other people talk.
What's the point of having a podcast if you can't get your point across?
Like, exactly.
That's the whole point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad you understand.
As a fellow podcaster.
As a fellow podcaster, yes. And a man much smarter than I am. I'm glad you understand. What was I going to say? Something about, Embiid's got them really, really winning. And by the way, I am inclined to agree. And listen, I love Allen Iverson. I absolutely adore Allen Iverson. But I totally agree with you. I think that Embiid is I'm sorry, Philly fans. I think he might be a superior talent. Because listen, Iverson, the thing you love about him, he could shoot from anywhere in the court. And he had the biggest heart in the world. I really love him because I'm only 5'9". And, like, he plays like a big man in a little man's body. And that's kind of how I play, even though I can't really do it. but watching him do that and watching him have all that heart on the court and put that out there every single time, you have to respect that.
He was one of the world's greatest entertainners. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But Embiid has just got this raw talent, this just supreme talent and understanding. And he's, the thing about it is, he is so freaking smart. Just watching him play and watching his Twitter, he's so intelligent. He's just a really smart kid.
He is, and that is very important. And I mean, just the defensive impact he can have is so much greater than Iverson's because of what a big man can do. It's really hard to even put an upside, a ceiling on this kid.
Yeah, it's incredible. But that brings me to the last point, and then I should let you go because we're already, like, you know, getting long on the conversation, which I'm really enjoying, by the way. But do you think, so Embiid has come out and mentioned that they might be headed for the playoffs. Do you think it's actually possible that they could make the playoffs? And it's a 2-part question. If they do, what does that mean for this franchise going forward?
Yeah, I mean, could they? I guess I would be very hesitant to ever say anything is really impossible. I've seen enough crazy stuff in my life to say sure they could. I think they're 5.5 games back. But it's more the sheer number of teams that they would have to pass. Mm-hmm. I think there's like 4 or 5 teams that would have to leapfrog just to get into the 8th seed. And that seems really unlikely. Like, I think there's a team that's probably going to get hot in the second half of the season, is going to run away with it. But then again, a week ago, I think there were 8, 9, maybe even 10 games back. So, you know, anything could happen. They're certainly playing well. But I would probably say it's unlikely. Which isn't, I don't think it is a, you know, I think nobody has really had any expectations, certainly of the playoffs before this season. I mean, if you did, then God bless, you're the most optimistic person I've ever met.
Optimistic is a good word for it, yeah.
Yeah, crazy could be the other one. Either one, they certainly not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But I think what it shows is that how much difference one guy can make, and really, you know, I think people talk about this being 3, 4, 5-year rebuild from this point on. If Embiid is who we think he is and is who he's shown that he is, you know, I think this is going to be a lot quicker than most people realize. And you get Ben Simmons back, you add one more, maybe even 2 more high-level talents in this draft, depending on how the Lakers pick and the Sixers pick shakes out. This could be a situation where they come out next year and they really challenge, and you could see them making a run for an 8 seed. You can see Embiid coming in and really controlling the game on a day-in, day-out basis, hopefully playing a little more minutes than he currently is, rounding out whatever small rough patches he has in terms of turnovers and committing fouls and staying on the court. You know, this is a guy almost through sheer will of personality and just incredible impact on the game, that this team could be relevant, I think, a lot sooner than people expect. And I think for a fan base that has gone through so much for so long, if this is, you know, this section, stage 2 of the rebuild, we'll call it, if it is maybe shorter than people expected, I don't think anybody's really going to complain, because it's on the backs of a truly unique and elite talent. It could be fun. It could be fun.
Totally. I don't know how it could not be, is the thing.
Well, we know how it could not be, really. But we're not going to talk about that injury possibility that is ever looming. Yeah.
I don't want to hear the I word. no, but like, so, but what if they actually did make, I didn't, like you mentioned that, like, it's not feasible, but listen, we didn't think that Embiid was going to be this either. Nobody saw this coming. So anything, it really is possible for me. You know what? I don't care if they don't get another high draft pick. Listen, if they would happen to sneak into the 8th seed this year and they get the, what number would that make them? The 15th pick?
Well, at that point, you're probably getting the Sacramento Kings pick, because you have the right to swap picks with them.
Exactly. So you're still going to get like probably a top 10 pick, and then you still have the Lakers pick. Although the Lakers are, I think they're in hardcore tank mode at this point.
Yeah. But, and that's another pick. It's top 3 protected. So there is a possibility that doesn't convey.
Yeah. And so remind me, cause I don't really know if it doesn't convey this year, they get it next year unprotected. Is that correct?
Unprotected. Correct. Yep.
So if the Lakers are really bad again next year, they could get their really good pick.
They could, and that should be another, I mean, it's hard to say a year and a half out, but that could be another strong draft class by all indications.
That's great. I don't really follow the draft until like right before it happens, so then I kind of cram on YouTube and see all the players in, but I've been pretty good at scouting on YouTube, I got to tell you.
There's a lot more information out there than there used to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can't even imagine this. It's crazy. I mean, the internet has just changed everything, which is awesome, but... going down a road I don't even know why we're going down. So maybe they make the playoffs. The funny thing is, we haven't even, sorry, I'm looking at other things while I'm trying to get back to this. I'll cut some of this out. the funny thing is, we haven't even talked about Ben Simmons and what he's going to mean for the team. So like, if Ben Simmons is as good as we suspect he might be as well, I think they might actually be able to sneak into the 8th seed this year. Maybe I'm optimistic Sixers fan, but
I mean, there's anything's possible. I mean, when Ben comes back, he'll help solve 2 problems. First of all, I think he's going to help their transition game quite a bit, not only because he can grab a rebound and push it and he's really creative in transition, but also because he can force, you know, help force turnovers. And, you know, his defense was kind of up and down last year at LSU, but the one thing he always had was great anticipation skills. So he could jump a passing lane, you know, pick a guy clean off the dribble. He had that ability, and I think he'll help the Sixers get out in transition. And obviously he has an elite passing talent and creativity that the Sixers right now just don't really have from the perimeter. So yeah, I think he's going to come in, make an immediate impact, even though I think he's probably going to be limited when he first comes back, both in terms of back-to-backs and minutes. But he'll help. And I mean, for a team right now that they are, I think, first in the NBA over the last 10 games in defense, certainly while Embiid's on the court, they have been. Mm-hmm. I think they have like the fifth or sixth ranked defense since December 1st, which that's a pretty good stretch of games. So for a team that has really built an identity, I mean, look, they can certainly go out and win far more than anyone expects in the second half of the year. They do have a pretty brutal, you know, February schedule of games, and you kind of want to see what they're going to be like after that. But, I mean, like I said, everything has been such a surprise so far this season that everything is pretty much on the table.
Absolutely. You know, even, like, at this point, I think anyone that's a Sixers fan, or maybe even in the, you know, any fan of the NBA or wherever, would probably consider this a huge win for them this year.
Yeah, you're playing with house money at this point.
Oh, yeah. It's just been so much fun to watch. I honestly didn't expect them to be this much fun. I thought, like, you know, I honestly thought Embiid was going to come along slow and we'd see very little of him, but it's just been great. And I'm like gushing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't have much else to say except that, yeah, thank you so much again for coming on. And you're obviously welcome to come on and talk about the Sixers anytime you want, Derek.
No, anytime. It was my pleasure. And hopefully this is a team that, I mean, they're so much more compelling this year than previous years that, you know, I think there's a lot more casual interest in the Sixers. I think the Embiid phenomenon has really picked up here in the last 2 weeks. When he's had this run and when the team has been winning games and when he's been right front and center and all of that, you know, I think as you get Embiid or Simmons back, you see those two get on the court for the first time together. You maybe resolve some of this big man glut at the trade deadline. I think there's a whole lot to look forward to in the second half of this season. And you just knock on wood and hope everything cooperates in terms of Embiid and Simmons' foot, because if they do that, it should be a fun time.
Oh, it's going to be so great. You know what? Really quick before I let you go, let me ask you, do you think there's a chance that they actually vote him into the All-Star game? Do you think he gets in as a reserve?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I think there's probably a better than 50-50 chance. You know, I think there's a lot of veteran players who will probably get the nod. You know, I think guys like Kevin Love, Paul George, I think you'll see those guys get some of those spots. But I think once you start getting past that group, maybe even a guy like Carmelo, even though I don't think he necessarily would deserve it all that much, and certainly not as much as I think he was like fourth or fifth among Eastern Conference front court players in player voting,
that's a legacy vote if ever I've heard of one.
Yeah. But I think he has a real shot, and especially, like I said, since there's a chance that I think a coach would want a traditional big man on the roster. And I think if you're picking among those in the Eastern Conference, I mean, you're pretty much coming down to Embiid or Whiteside. And Whiteside certainly has some of the raw numbers because he's playing more minutes per game. He certainly has the rebounding edge. But everything else, I think you'd probably go to Embiid, including defensively, which is pretty incredible since Whiteside really came into the league and got his second shot because of that defense. But Embiid's been right there with him, and he's obviously a more talented offensive player.
Oh, for sure. You know, and the other thing is, like, I didn't even think about this until earlier today, and I was like, you know, he's this close. Embiid is already this close to getting into an All-Star. Like, it's just so close. And then you consider, which I always forget about, if there's an injury and he's this close already, he might be, like, the first alternate, you know? So there's a really good chance he gets into the All-Star game in his first year.
And then hopefully for the next decade, health permitting.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Anyway, Derek, thank you again so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you, and you're welcome to come on the podcast anytime you want.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Plug your stuff one more time, and then I'll let you go.
Easiest way, like I said, I have Sixers coverage, draft coverage, Sixers podcast. Easiest way for all of that is at Derek Bodner, NBA.
Great. All right, Derek, I'll let you go. Thanks again for talking some Sixers with me, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yep, my pleasure. Best of luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, there you go, everybody. Derek Bodner. Thanks again so much, Derek, for coming on and shedding some light on the Sixers season. And you guys can check him out, you know where and you know how. And I'll talk to you next week. Okay, bye-bye.